Yeah, actually I won't say too much, so I would be just using the blackboard. Well, bottom line first, right? So we know that we have now the spinner condensate experiment has already been done by the MIT group in the Georgia tech group. And that in that case, we have this spin degree of freedom of the condensate.
Also by Germany.
Also by Germany, I forgot, yeah, by Sengtok. And on the other hand, we also have optical lattices where we actually have seen the Mott Hubbard transition. And so one of the natural question to ask is what happened if we put spinner bosons on an optical lattice when we are in this Mott Hubbard regime. The bottom line is it offers a lot of, it's offers a very interesting system with some very peculiar properties, which I would mention, I feel. And the real bottom line is a lot of things I really don't know, so that's why it's so short. okay, now back to the business. Actually, the similar lines actually have been mentioned by many speakers in this workshop and also in the conferences that you had before I come. That for the two component gas, Boris and Walter Hofstadter, I think he left, talk about the two component system. And some of the physics would be common to what I would be talking about. I would specifically talk about the spin one Bose gas. And in that particular respect, there were a lot of papers by Daimler and Fei Zhao, who are not here right now. And I would, some of the things probably were already mentioned by them. I think I, for some, yeah, I missed Fei Zhao's talk, so I don't know what he actually had mentioned. Yeah, I would not quote specific papers where particular results would come from. Well, just for the record, I have two papers, one on PLL and one in Journal of Physics Condensed Matter, both in 2003. So the business is, just to remind you, the spinner condensate. So this one is just in a bulk. So this is just not in the optical lattice yet. Experiments has been done for the element sodium 23. This one is MIT. That one was done for the hyperfine spin F equal to 1. And the Georgia Tech group, this is, would be on rubidium 87. This one is also F equal to 1. And the German group, I think G, so Dodge. So this is F equal to 2. So this is also rubidium 87. Okay, sorry for about all the missing details, but so I would specifically mostly mentioning this particular case. The only reason is just that I have thought a little bit more about it. And these two cases are a little bit different. The essential point is that now for two spin one bosons, I would confuse hyperfine spin with spin from now on, F equal to 1 bosons. They interact through two through two interacting channels, and it can be F total equal to zero or two, assuming only S wave interaction. And there are, so there are two distinct cases. One is depending on whether I have the interaction in the zero channel is less than the spin two channel, or the other way around. And for simplicity, I would just take the positive cases for the moment. So assuming that there are no collapse. And so the first case would correspond to this case, which we would say this is the anti-ferromagnetic case. And this one is the ferromagnetic case. For the second one, the ground state for the spinner would actually be of the form I would have 5, 1, and this one would be 0, 0. And whereas this one, I have many forms of writing it. One way of writing it can be of this form, or I can also write it as this form. And these states are called polar if you come from the helium-3 background, or it's called nematic if you come from the crystal, liquid crystal literature. And the symmetry, as I said, this one is the one that I would concentrate on. The symmetry of this one is best described by something with no direction, but is something, you know, sort anisotropic in spin space.
So these two just different, the same statement in different axes. Well,
That's right. Okay, and so this is like a vector, but with no direction. Okay. So that was in the bulk. This part of the work, I think, was first described by Jason and also a Japanese group, Machida, I think.
Is this consistent with this order the state as Fedorov?
This is just in the bulk yet. I'm not putting in optical lattice yet. I'm just warming up right now.
But even in the bulk, this they could have this quadruple order. Right?
Yeah, this is the one with the quadruple order.
Okay.
This is the one with the quadruple order.
What they emphasize is that there is a there is a particular conditions which may lead to interesting properties, which is that if you turn the director by pi, and then you can compensate it by a phase change by pi also. So therefore, it is therefore appropriate to call it as a pneumatic, because then it's like a pneumatic director that can locate by pi, but then so
yeah. I Tony probably have something to say about this half lattices.
Well, okay, I actually think this way putting it is perfectly possible, but maybe make it sound unnecessarily mysterious.
I absolutely agree with you. All it has is that this one component has
this better. That's right.
I myself don't like
that. Yeah. In these spaces, then one of them has a vortex and the other doesn't, and that's all to it.
I agree with you. Now the only thing that would be used, the only situation that would be relevant is if the spin condensation axis is really rotating, but then that is not the case in the in these systems. So.
Okay. Let me move on from the bulk now to the optical lattice. And so as I mentioned, there are now experiments that not for the spinner condensate, but for just polarized atoms, so there's no spin degree of freedom, where we can actually go to the Mott-Hubbard regime. Namely, if there's an integer, in that case, the experiment is for one boson per site. And the regime is such that the barrier is large compared with the tunneling between the different wells. So basically, the system is in an insulating state rather than in the superfluid state. So that was it if you just have spin polarized atoms, because there would be no
interaction. Because to have the system in an insulating state, you need to compare tunneling, not with barrier.
I step tunneling over the barrier. Oh, that is interaction. Sorry, I said that there's interaction. Okay, it's this T much less than the interaction. Sorry, I said it incorrectly. Okay. So now the question is, now if I allow these guys to have the spin degree of freedom, what would one have? So now these guys have spins, and you can, if I really have infinite barriers, and I let me just for simplicity consider one particle per site. So in that case, if I really have no hopping whatsoever between the different wells, this system is very simple, because I just have one particle, and the energy of the system is completely independent of which direction these spins are pointing. But if I allowed tunneling, a weak tunneling between the different sites, then the degeneracies would be split. So in that case, if I'm still really deep in the insulating regime, the system is just basically would be described by an effective spin Hamiltonian. But that effective spin Hamiltonian is actually very strange. Let's first consider two sides. Okay, so if I have no hopping, if t equals 0, it's completely degenerate with respect to the direction. If t is not equal to 0, then I would have virtual hopping between these two sites. And it's easiest to describe, classifies the state according to total spin of the two sites. It's just a straightforward exercise by perturbation theory. So the result is, for small t, so I would have a lowering of the energy for these two sites according to the total S. I would put it as a subscript. If this total spin equals 0, then it is easy to show it is this, because the total spin of the system is 0. So the virtual state has two bosons on one side, and they repel with interaction U0. For delta E, I would not write down delta E1 first. I would first write down delta E of 2. In that case, the virtual state is for two bosons on the same side, but they repel with U2. So these two can be easily be written down. The special thing is that this one is exactly 0, because I'm not allowed to put two bosons on the same site. Oh, I forgot to say, for realistic regime, because of the interaction of the bosons are weak, it makes sense to just talk about one orbital state per site. That was the implicit assumption that I forgot to mention. Okay. So these two situations then lead to two different scenarios here, just for the two case. So if for the first case, zero less than U zero less than U two, that would lead to delta E two less than zero is less than anti-fermented delta E zero is less than E two less than delta. So in this case, for two sides, the singlet has the lowest energy, but then its energy is less than spin 2, which is less than spin 1. Notice that it actually has a very peculiar reverse order for this one, because it's actually fixed by the boson symmetry. For the other case, I would not, as I said, I would not mention too much. This one corresponds to delta E2 is the lowest. They all start from zero, so I can write E2 here as well, which is less than E0, which is less than E1. I can rewrite everything in terms of a spin Hamiltonian. So the effective spin Hamiltonian would look like S1 dot S2 plus. As I said, I'm confusing hyperfine spins with spins now. Square. I actually need two of these invariants to capture these states. And if I plot J and K here, so this part would correspond to U2 greater than U0. And U2 less than U0. So the ordinary Heisenberg Hamiltonian for electronic system is only the first piece. It lies on this line or this line. If you have some corrections, so probably they just goes around a little bit around here. So on this line is an anti-ferromagnet. For this side is a ferromagnet. But for our system, although the effective Hamiltonian is a spin one system, it's just effective spin one, but it's actually is completely different from an ordinary ferromagnet, an anti-ferromagnet. That is sort of to be expected if we actually look at these two inequalities, which is completely different from what you would find on this axis or this axis.
So sorry, delta E1, how did you get delta E1?
Well, delta E1, so if I have no hopping, they are completely degenerate. So I look at the manifold of total spin one state, okay? Now, my virtual state would be one that looks like this one is completely empty and have two particles, okay? So, but this is actually not allowed. So actually I have no virtual state to hop to. So this one is zero. So by the same argument, I get U zero here when my virtual state is at total spin zero. So it's also like this. So in some sense, therefore, it's actually not very useful to think of this system as classical spins, because this ordering of the states are completely incorrect if you think of it classically. In particular, if you think of it as a classical spin in this region, then you might have thought that the spin would like to be parallel.
Sign of the K, is
all
this positive
definite? No. This is the plot. So this is always negative. It's all lies in this region. If say for the sodium atoms, then it would be all on this one. For rubidium, they would all be on this.
In principle, can K be positive or not?
Not when you construct it from bosons and hopping. Yeah. So that is the peculiar point of this. So
it is so what's the width of these this slopes may or
this is 1/3, this is j equal to 3k. This is j equal to k. This is slope 1 thing. Yeah, the essential point is that it's different from an ordinary anti-ferromagnet. It's also different from an ordinary ferromagnet.
The rest of the plane is inaccessible if you are dealing with bosons, am I right? So
basically, yeah, that's right. If you start from the deep mod limit, at least, yeah. There are a lot of papers discussing the possible ground state for this Hamiltonian, especially for the for this region, that what I mentioned in the very beginning, Eugene Daimler and Fei Zhao. I would not go into that right now, but I want to mention some of the peculiar properties just following from here. So from now on, I would just compare the energies for different total spins. The statements that I would be making is actually precise only when I'm in a finite lattice. But let me just do that for a moment. Okay, so this is a finite lattice. And it would be true for most lattice types. I would not say what are the caveats here, but it would be evident below. So the peculiar properties just following from the Hamiltonian, I'm talking about this part only, is that if I have even number of size, I know the following. I'll say what I mean by that later. What I meant is that this is inverse. The lowest energy state with spin total equal to zero has lower energy than the lowest energy state for total spin equal to two, which has less energy than the state with total spin equal to one, and so forth. Okay. Similar for here. Notice, of course, this is.
What is the second inequality? This is the white dot first one. Could you explain? So you have.
Right, yes, it's the same thing. So the total. The state with the lowest S total equal to the lowest. The state with.
It's the ground state.
No, I'm not.
The spin 2 is less than the ground.
No. What I'm saying, yeah, that's right. The lowest energy state in the spin 2 euro sector is less than the total spin in. Yeah, you know what I mean. This is. Okay.
Is
this
an exact statement or is it just the main field approximation?
Exact. Yeah. And similar for this one. Okay. For two spins, it's already follow from here. So it follows from two things. One is from the boson spin symmetry, and one is from the interaction. Mm-hmm. Okay. What I'm saying is that in fact it's true even for a lattice, for almost any lattice. The other thing to notice, the interesting thing, is that it's all sort of there is a difference between the even number of size and odd number of size. So it's not continuous when I take n goes to infinity.
No,
any d.
But this statement almost irrelevant.
If you have spin, if you have broken spin symmetry, that's right. That's right. Okay. Okay. True. Perfectly true. So that's why I say, yeah, I say finite lattice. Yeah.
I'm a bit confused about the statement that there's an exact statement, because I thought even for the simple Heisenberg model, you couldn't solve it exactly in three dimensions.
Correct. But there are inequalities that you can derive without. So forth. If you are on this line, then the corresponding inequalities are E0 less than E1 less than E2 and so forth. Okay. Okay. And as remarked, that's why I actually need to put a finite lattice here, because the pitfall, of course, is that when the system size goes to infinity, these less than things would become less than equal, and then the spin symmetry is broken. Okay, but so long as I'm not in that case, these things would actually tell you something interesting about the system. The idea of the proof is actually very simple. Let me just go back to here for the moment. I can write down, for example, some of the wave functions over here. So, for example, I'm just writing some particular states. The total spin zero state, I can write it as, just for two sides, minus plus, and then minus zero zero. Okay, up to some overall factor. So, and for a reason that I will tell you a little bit later, I would not choose this particular gauge, but whenever I see a zero, I would add a phase to it, say I. So whenever I see a pair of zero, it would become a plus. S total equal to 2 actually has the following form. And this one I would write as so once I write it in this manner, this state actually has the peculiar property that all of these coefficients are of the same sign. And the exercise is just as follows. So I would, for any state, this is just idea of proof. So I write all my states, say, with, say, net 2, SC equal to 2, so I can have something like this. And all in the prime basis, plus, and I can have 0, plus, 0, 0, plus some coefficients, 1, 2, 3, and plus, plus, and then 0, 0, minus, plus. And I just write down all of these things. And
so this would be the state with what?
Oh, no, I'm just writing. I'm just sketching the idea of the proof. I'm not telling the very details.
Oh, but this state
yeah.
is a state with
S subs. So I first look at S, say, total into some number. Okay. So in that particular case, it's 2.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, so but this is, oh, I just do it
yes.
for all of them, yes, just like this. Okay?
Statement. That's okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask the question first. So, suppose I'm in high dimension.
Yeah.
So I have two kind of excitations. One is so-called zero-mode excitation. I mean, you can see large system, and you know the lowest eigenmode in the system. And then I have a spin power, which basically for NSE, when I have 0, 2, 4, etc. On the other hand, I also have finite k mode, which corresponds to spin. excitations. But I think there's nothing prevent me to have finite k-mode excitation with spin order 2.
That's right. So this one, it's irrespective of Q.
But that's what I don't understand. I mean, I can have finite Q mode with spin order 2. The energy can be as high as I want because.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I said in words, but I'm saying that the lowest mode in the spin 2 sector has higher energy than the lowest mode in spin 0 chamber. Yeah.
So it's a Q equal to 0, basically Q equal to
0. No, whatever the Q. There would be one state at which it has the lowest energy in the spin 2 sector.
Q equal to 0, right? Q equal to 0 always has the lowest energy.
Depending on Hamiltonian.
No, that depends on the Hamiltonian.
Just for that piece of Hamiltonian, you get Q equal to 0. That was the mode. I mean, the spin wave, you have to fix the spin with respect to each other. How can you have low energy when you get Q equal to 0?
No. That's not the issue here. So I'm just talking about the lowest mode. Yeah, okay. And the proof is just that for this sector, all these coefficients are of the same sign. Okay, it can be proven from the Hamiltonian. The second part, so all these C, I can say the C alpha.
Well, if you are doing the total spin S to 2, then there will be condition between all these coefficients. This is just saying S of 0 to 2, but then
So then the lowest energy state is this one, all greater than 0. The next exercise is just to figure out what the total spin for this particular state would be.
I see.
Okay. So that's the whole idea of the proof.
Well, that's something that you can establish.
That's right. Yeah. So the first statement is that it follows from H that this is greater than 0.
Considering this only this Hamiltonian or
this Hamiltonian, this part. Anything on this part.
I see. Okay.
And then I want to find S total. And for this thing, I would compare it with a system that I know how to solve, basically. And that is where this comes in. And the system that I was able to solve was nothing but the one that I chop it into two only pairwise interaction. So in other words, if I start from a lattice, triangular lattice, which I don't know how to solve, and I just compare with one that I can solve, which I would only allow interaction between pairwise. This one I can figure out what the S total would be, but then it also satisfied this theorem, and so therefore they must have the same S total. But anyway, so that was the idea of the proof.
Second one again.
The second one is
you figure out what the S total is
for this. Yeah, that's right. So this is whatever this state would be. I compare with this system which I know, so phi of prime, and so this overlap must be non-zero, right? So they must have the S total, the same S total.
Oh, I see.
Because this statement applies even for this and this.
But that only means that the psi has an overlap with the spin.
Yeah.
But still, if I want it to be an eigenstate of S total equals to 2, then there are additional. I need to filter out other.
Yeah, okay, now you're asking more details of the argument. So first you go to the S total, SC total equal to 0 sector.
Right.
Okay, yeah. Then you, using these things, you establish that the ground state has finite overlap, and so therefore the total S of that, of the ground state of this the Hamiltonian that I'm unable to solve has S total equal to 0.
Yes.
Right, so now I move to SC total equal to 1. I do the same exercise again.
Yeah.
Right? And so I would find that for this one, the ground state actually has S total equal to 2, not 1.
Then
I would conclude that the ground state of this one also has.
So you can establish as 0 and 2, etc. And you can say 1 is not there.
Well, 1 is not in the ground state of this one, so it would.
This is this configuration, you can see the basically doesn't have any orange or.
That's right. But I only use this to figure out the spin ordering of the states.
But you still haven't established that S0 is less than S2. You say that F psi have both F0, S equals 0, S equals 2.
No, I actually did. Because if I look at the SC total equal to 0 sector, this sector would contain all the states with S total equal to 0, 2, and so forth, right? So long as I establish the ground state of this state actually belongs to this one, then I would immediately conclude this inequality. Yeah.
But I'm sorry, Agatha, but you from your construction, number 2, you only say that S, the ground state only overlap with 0 and 2, etc. But at what point you establish that the ground state is actually at 0? I just don't quite.
No. Once I establish these things, then this is the ground state. It's S total equal to 0.
That's outside the configuration.
No.
The ground state should involve the infinite long range body, because it has in high dimension you have rigid body. It's almost like you have the mass state make a linear superposition of it. Microscopically you basically get infinite long range body.
That's okay. If you go to infinite limit, you would have all these pitfalls when these are equal.
In a finite size limit.
Yeah.
This configuration you talk about actually corresponding to highly excited state.
No, I only use this to establish this inequality. I'm not saying the ground state looks like this.
No, I understand. I understand.
I don't understand. The range of
he's not looking relevant. He's not, okay. I'm trying
to
see
whether that. Let's discuss the details of the proof later, because I think it's going to run too long. But okay, so I'm just sketching the idea of the proof. That's it. Okay. I'm not saying the ground state looked like this. I'm not using this.
No, he's not saying that at all.
I'm not saying that at all.
He said many times, but he just want to tell you what the spin content of the system is as well.
The ground state configuration, and of course it would make sense only when I really talk about an infinite lattice. And would subject to all these caveats about finite size effect and so forth. So that is the other opposite limit of these statements. In higher dimension, I agree with Fei Chao that the most likely state is the nematic state. So this is ground state. And all these statements, I would not make very precise here, because I think a lot of things are still unknown. Likely. So then, if I look from the bulk, then it's just as if I just put, it's as if just I take the bulk state and then I just chop it into pieces by this optical lattice. For 1D, the most likely state is in fact a diamond state. That actually follows from the older literature. I myself didn't establish this. There were, at the old times, due to some historical reason, people studied the phase diagram of this thing in the entire circle and ask what the ground state would be. And actually started the study with the first one demonstrate the dimerization is on this one back in the 80s by a whole lot of people, which I would not give you the complete list. I mean, the more complete list is actually in my paper. And there were numerical work throughout this entire regime, in particular by two people from, I think it's from Budapest, Faf and Solyom.
By dimer, you mean dimer solid? Or what?
Yes, sorry. Okay. Okay. What? Okay. By dimerization, it just meant. No. It's actually the numerical work. I was just saying that. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that who is first, because once you establish that you actually have a dimerization here with a finite gap, then you would know that it would actually extend beyond a certain range. Right. The whole question is just how long it would extend to. So, and that is also part of the, a lot of uncertainties here. And what I meant by dimerization is that the system actually has a broken translational symmetry that that the spin correlation, say, between 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is actually different from 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and so forth. So, for example, and so forth.
Haldane
states actually sits in here.
And only here?
In this range, yeah. So in fact, uh-huh. Yeah. So I think the accepted wisdom is that it extends through this region. So I think it's to this.
Haldane space is irrelevant to both.
That's right. That is the important point. Yeah. And yeah, if you know the literature, this so-called AKLT state is on this line and so forth. The wave function, actually, I was trying to draw this, but I think Fei Zhang was very, very unhappy. That has nothing to do with the state, but the point is that the wave function here, if I say inverse, it basically has the following configuration. So it consists of superpositions, of course. Let me say it again. In this particular case, then the ground state, of course, I have singlets, they're completely broken. But that does not really solve the Hamiltonian here. It actually has to mix in the cases where each of the pair actually have spin fluctuations. Mostly important, each of them is the spin equal to 2 sector, because you know that is the lowest energy state. And the whole thing, again, make into a singlet and so forth. Okay, that is the qualitative statement. Although I said that, in fact, I think there are a lot of things that are unknown. Is that, for example, if I really start from a one-dimensional system, it's in the dimerized state, it has no broken symmetry, a spin symmetry, and the spin excitation has a spin gap. And if I put these systems with a weak hopping between the different chains, the dimer state is actually expected to survive at least for a while. Okay, so therefore there would be also a regime if I talk about unequal tunneling. If I make a lattice so that the hopping, say, along the x-axis is stronger than the, say, than the y and z. In fact, the dimerized state should actually be stable for a while. So in fact, that is actually the caveat also on this one. The other thing also is uncertain, is and also suggested by some of the papers, is in this, somewhere in between these two, it is also possible that the dimerization, namely here, what I meant by is this broken transmutative symmetry, can coexist with this broken spin symmetry by Nemedy. I think Fei Chao actually wrote down one of this.
Yes.
Somewhere in between. I mean, somewhere, you know.
There's a variational calculation.
He has a variational wave function. I also wrote down one of them. So, okay. So, lastly, I would mention one thing here is that is this system is really peculiar. Especially these inequalities, because the spin symmetry is not broken, I can say something about this particular case. If I really have, I'll now draw my dimerized state just like this. As I said, I do not mean real singlet pairs between these two. Okay, so I would have a wave function that looked like this. Now, one might have thought that I would like to create solitons in the system. And if I just look at it naively, I might have thought that I create a spin one excitations. Usually, in one dimensional system, this is sort of one way of creating lowest energy excitations of the system. But however, we actually know that this is actually system is actually very tricky. In particular, if I create two of them, in fact, when I put these two together, forming, actually I know that it actually has a lower energy state than the spin one soliton. And also, from here, actually, these things would not prove that I have a dimerized state as pointed out, they are caveats on a higher dimension. But these inequalities would look very, very reasonable. You actually have to start from a dimerized state, because if I start from a dimerized state, then it just tells you that the lowest excitations is that you create spin, you know, it's a singlet, and I create spin two. And if I start from odd number of sites, then I'm stuck with one of these spin one here. And so that's why I actually start from lowest energy spin one, and so forth.
The dimerized case is extremely, basically saying that if the short range singlet correlations is consistent with these results.
Yeah, I was just saying that you can.
The dimerization is different from the
single. Yeah,
that's correct. Short range doesn't guarantee them.